You're listening to Around Comics, episode 241, brought to you by InStockTrades.com and Netflix. I love it. From Chicago, this is Around Comics, the comic culture podcast, where each week a revolving panel of guests talk about everything in and around the world of comic books and comics culture. And Around Comics is normally recorded at Dark Tower Comics and Collectibles, but this week we are coming to you from our second home, Challengers Comics and Conversation, located at 1845 Northwestern Avenue in Chicago. If you are in the area, please drop by.
On a daily basis.
Every Wednesday and maybe twice on Fridays, right?
Always something interesting.
Hey there, folks. Chris Trenisman here. Let me get you introduced to this week's panel. It's, I don't want to call you all B-listers, but...
I don't consider myself a B-lister. Maybe in your mind, pal. I'm leaving this podcast.
We're too good for your normal show.
Exactly.
Want to speak Bill O'Reilly against Terry Gross on Fresh Air, man?
It's a very special Around Comics.
Sal is
still out of town. I think he just got back from Vegas. Tom is probably at home drowning his sorrows after the Cubs just won the game because the Brewers walked in the winning run in the bottom of the 10th inning.
First place teams don't do that, Tom. I'm very surprised.
I gotta gloat when I can as the Cubs continue their plummet, but not for today.
Yeah, but Tom may be back later tonight, which will be next week's show. So Tom will be back, and then Sal, we just don't know where he is. He's wandering the earth like
Kane and Kung Fu.
He is. David Carradine passed away, so now he's taking up the mantle.
What is this two drink minimum you speak
Everybody
of?
Everybody, check your hotel closet to find Sal.
He's walking the earth. Oh, that's bad. I just got that.
Or the bathtub full of ice with his kidney missing or something. God forbid. I'm sure you're fine, Sal.
Well, our guest this week making up this panel, first of all, the one of the owner-operators of Challengers Comics, Mr. Patrick Brower.
Hey, everybody.
Next is a longtime friend of the show and a fantastic artist whose work has appeared in Nixon's Pals, Elephant Man, the recently released
Marvel Mystery Comics.
Awesome.
Do they even call it number one?
Anniversary
awesome. I don't know if thank you. I was waiting for Neesman to search for the words. It's funny seeing the panic on his face.
And what's sad is that I did draw a blank, and I own a page of the book.
And, get in line, brother.
Yeah, I know. You own a very nice page. Mine's better.
Featured prominently, too, in the Comic Book Podcast Companion by Tomorrow.
So. I had, my own page on that thing.
Yes, for your 24-hour comic.
Yes, pretty neat.
Oh, I thought that was part of the don't ever have as a guest as section.
what not to do on a podcast.
We've all learned that. And then of course, Mr. John Suntress.
Hi. You all know me from such films as The Decapitation of Leadfoot Larry and Alice Through the Windshield Glass.
And if you listen to Word Balloon, then you certainly know, John.
Those are Troy McClure movies from The Simpsons when Homer has to go to driving school. I'm Troy McClure. The Decapitation of Leadfoot Larry.
That's where my
Alice Through the Windshield Glass.
And that's where my it's funny because I don't know him line comes from. It's from that episode when he's watching the driving school drinking.
Films,
yeah, the drinking and driving.
Yeah, don't drink and drive.
Yeah, and people are, running into each other and dying horrific deaths, and Homer's cracking up. He's like, it's funny because I don't know him.
But Phil Hartman. Poor Phil Hartman.
Anyway, before we get rolling here, first of all, I want to let you know that this episode is sponsored by InStockTrades.com, and InStockTrades is your source for trade paperbacks, collected editions,
archives,
essentials, archives, omnibus art editions, absolute editions, all that collected stuff, all at great discounted prices, and all orders, and this is where they get you. All orders over $50 ship for free, and so I always go there, and I'm like, $34.95. Let me see here. Okay,
and then it's
$70, and they got me. I'm like, oh, they got me again.
Free shipping though.
But yeah, it's a great discounted collected edition service, and the folks there are great, and they are right now for our book club selection. They are even further discounting the Justice League International Volume 1, which normally retails. I think it's. is it $17.99? And it's discounted 47% off the cover price for a phenomenal $9.54.
We're under $10.
Under $10 for that.
Is that Giffen and Demand? Is that the first Giffen and Demand? The Bwahaha?
Yep, it's the first of the Bwahaha. And we'll be talking about that in probably within the next month. Okay. I would say so. Cool. So pick that up and read along, and we'll have our book club episode here in a few weeks.
Are you going to their big ass sale next weekend?
You know, I want to.
As we record this,
I don't know if I'm going to be able to. That's going to be in Fort Wayne, Indiana, at the Discount Comic Book Service Home Store, their brick and mortar store, and they've got their 10th anniversary sale, and it's like 90% off
books that have dings and dents,
scratch and dent.
Yeah,
10-cent back issues. Patrick is just rolling over and dying
on
the floor here.
I want to point out that,
well, this is for people in the Indiana.
Regardless of how much you spend at Challengers, there are no handling fees whatsoever.
There you go.
Well, you don't charge people for the handling.
That is correct.
No. All right.
There's handling involved.
I was going to say, but your brand of handling is probably different than what your average customer expects.
Most people charge for my brand of handling.
We talked about the podcast companion coming up. Our next recording on Friday, July 17th. At Dark Tower, we'll be having our comic book podcast companion post-release party,
okay.
and several of the comic book podcasts that are in the book are going to be at the store, and we'll be doing that.
That'll be fun. Looking forward to that. I wanted to point out another thing that's happening in the Chicago area. It's a museum exhibit that's going on until the beginning of September, and mm-hmm. it's a great way to plan a trip to Chicago. You come to Challengers, you check out the store. You come over and check out what we do. But also, you make a chance, or you stop over to Elmhurst, because at the Elmhurst Historical Museum, which is in downtown Elmhurst, right off the metro stop, in fact, so there is even a train that is literally half a block away from the museum itself, they are doing the drawn-out history of comic books. It's until September 5th, and it's this great two-floor exhibit of original art, amazing displays, and an archive film from like the mid-70s that Doug Klaba, my buddy who's known for his work on The Phantom for Moonstone mm-hmm. and is currently working on Superpowers for Dynamite, he had this this 16mm film. They transferred it onto a DVD and have a big screen constantly running. And it's this 15-minute movie from the mid-70s narrated by Stan Lee, and it features professionals from DC and Marvel talking about the books they were currently working on. And you've got Denny O'Neill and Neil Adams working on the Superman versus Muhammad Ali book. You've got Archie Goodwin and Stan Lee poring over sketches and photographs of a model dressed as the human fly, because they were about to mount that book. And if you'll pardon the expression, burn them, because I know where your dirty mind goes, dirty man.
I'm operating slowly.
Was there free handling whenever they mounted that book?
Yes. 17-year-old Trevor Von Eden, the original co-creator of Black Lightning with Tony Isabella, and Jim Steranko talking about his great crime graphic novel, Chandler or Red Tide, depending on who you talk to. Those are the two titles it was under. And his footage is shot in black and white. And totally on this set, which I believe is his studio, because I've always heard this about his workplace, it looks like a 1930s private eyes office. And Jim is totally dressed
up. Only that's awesome.
Got the old crow, fifth of old crow, sitting next to him.
Pinstripe shoot, just vertical shadow lines across everything.
Hilarious.
Does he have the Miles whole, is the whole office like scaled to like 75% so he looks like the size of a normal dude?
Yeah, and that he looks like he's a power forward for the NBA, exactly. No.
They just set him up near the front, you know.
It's a forced perspective.
But it's called The Drawn Out History of Comics, and really it's very cool. There are interactive things for kids. You can trace over sketches and make your own pictures of Spider-Man and some of the other characters. And then also they have time-elapsed footage of Jill Thompson, Doug Klauba, and Bill Reinhold sketching at their home studios.
I thought it was going to be time-lapse footage of them.
The growing older.
Yes, exactly.
There's Jill Thompson whenever she was six.
No. But it's really cool. And you see them drawing incredibly fast, and you see them just drawing these amazing sketches and tons of original art. Very, very cool.
Awesome.
So check it out, and I'll provide a link at my website.
Yeah, it may even be on the event page at Around Comics.
Good.
We may have put it
excellent.
There.
Right. And I brought you a poster if you want, Patrick.
Oh, yeah, definitely honestly, put it. I think it's cool. John, your website is challengerscomics.com.
That is correct. That is correct.
I thought it was chrisburnham.com.
Yeah, that is correct.
Good Lord. Where is the bell?
I'm everywhere.
All right. Last little thing before we get rolling here, because I always forget to say who the featured music is. Today is Whiskey Town. which if you are familiar
with
Ryan Adams, yes, I was twittering about that, and it got a hearty response. Jason Latour and Chris Somney's wife Laura are apparently also big Whiskey
Town
fans.
That's a hearty response. All right.
And there were several other people.
I'm teasing.
Maybe four.
It's Hardy. Chris is listening to Whiskey Town. Oh, very nice.
Did you start listening to them just because there's whiskey in their name?
You know, those were some of the responses, is that people were like, that's very fitting for you, Chris.
Because I am a fan of whiskey as well.
I like the whiskey.
I like going to Whiskey Town. I don't know about... Anyway.
So, it's been like a month since I recorded, so I'm a little rusty here. Gotta shake it out there and get rolling. So, why don't you guys lift me up here, and so I don't have to talk for a couple minutes. What have you guys been reading that has caught your attention that you would like to talk about?
Well, I brought up a bunch of books, and if you want, I can just pick one, and we can go around and
come
back.
Sure, go around.
I want to start with Greek Street, which came out from Vertigo this week, only a dollar. And it's got to be pages.
I love. Here I am talking already. I love that Vertigo is doing that with their introductory issues.
I too want to applaud their decision to do that, because Unwritten has sold through the roof because of that, and most of those people came back for number two because it's still a good book. And Greek Street, we already had a reorder more number one just because it's almost gone for the week. It just came out 2 days ago.
And you got another one coming up here real soon, Jeff Lemire's Sweet Tooth.
Oh, Sweet Tooth is going to be excellent.
Yeah, the previews on that look phenomenal.
The Nobody hardcovers next week.
Soon to be on Word Balloon, Jeff Lemire.
Oh, awesome.
He's been very kind.
You just talk hockey with Jeff and you'll be fine.
I'm going to have to do some studying, but I'll manage. This is a great book, though, and I highly recommend it to fans of 100 Bullets that are wondering what they're going to do to sate their crime hunger until the Vertigo graphic novels come out. The two, Ian Rankin and Brian Azzarello, has his as well.
Oh, definitely. Filthy Rich for his.
Yeah, Filthy Rich. And I forget what Ian Rankin's Hellblazer book is called, but it's advertising.
They didn't put Hellblazer in the title, so I think a lot of people are going to miss out knowing that that's actually a Hellblazer book.
We'll see.
The good news, though, is Ian Rankin, and man, he's got quite a following. He's a wonderful crime novelist.
Yeah. Well, talking about the Somnies, Chris and Christos Gage doing a Vertigo.
Oh, Gage wrote that one?
I believe that's been announced.
Dark Entries is the Ian Rankin Hellblazer book. But yeah, nice. Greek Street is amazing.
Dark Entries sounds like gay porn.
Yeah, exactly. Well, but it is.
Doesn't everything sound like gay porn to you?
Exactly.
Well, yeah, I guess.
Dirty Young Man.
Animal Man. I mean, right
speaks
there.
For itself.
Well, you'll love Greek Street then, because there's tons of nudity and graphic stuff. And in a lot of ways, they are modern takes on a lot of the classic Greek tragedies and legends, but told in a very modern crime style. And David Gianfelice, I'm guessing might be the word, David Gianfelice, let's say that might be his name. But has a wonderful style, and it's hardcore nudity, and really cool, real cool crime stuff. And it really acts as a prologue to the entire series.
As much as I hate judging things by saying, oh, it's this meets this, but I kind of was pitching it as 100 Bullets meets Fables. Because it takes the classics,
really?
the Greek story, the Greek fables, well, you know, the Greek mythology, and puts it into a crime setting, like John said.
Yeah. No, it's fantastic, and being Greek, I was curious about it, but I heard Peter talking about it at the New York Con, and I know that Karen Berger was very excited about the series as well, and I spoke to her about it, and that's why I was thrilled to finally pick it up. And just as you said, Patrick, The Unwritten is another great example of that. I really think Vertigo is firing on all cylinders, and it's smart to do this size book for a dollar. It gets people excited, and it's a satisfying first read. It will definitely tell you, after reading this for only a dollar, whether you want to continue the series or not. And it's a great value and a great way to start a series.
You want to keep
I think you will.
I like seeing comic book companies lower the cost of comics.
It's hard sometimes to fall for the hype, because everybody promotes everything as if it's the best new thing ever.
And they have to.
And you can't always fall for that. So even like there's going to be some misses in the dollar thing coming up eventually, probably. Just law of averages, there has to be.
Sure.
But it's, so far, they're doing it right. And even so far as like Young Liars was going to be the next big Vertigo book that was going to carry us through, you know, the one that sold the most and had people coming in and buying all the trades at one time, but now it stops at 18. But they're definitely, there have been a lot of Vertigo misses, and Vertigo books are the best mainstays for trade sales over time, and it looks like they've got a couple more on their plate, which is great.
Yeah, with Vertigo, for those, you know, those really nice, and I don't even know what the numbers were on 100 Bullets, but I mean, that was a very complicated story, but it was pretty straightforward noirish crime, and Vertigo sometimes, I mean, they're very good at putting out books that have a lot of layers to them. They're, you know, you really have to keep up with them. They're very complex stories, and sometimes that's hard for, you know, a lot of comic fans to feel like they have to invest themselves.
That's the exact word Doug's going to use.
Yeah. You know, there's only so many Sandmans that come along in a
100 Bullets really did turn out to be this wonderful, dense, satisfying novel.
Oh, yeah.
And I mean, that's, you know, and that's really Lucifer. You can Sandman certainly.
Yeah, Lucifer is on such a resurgence now too. It's selling right now. It's selling better than Sandman for us.
Interesting.
And more people are just discovering it for the first time. And people who don't. I got a bartender over at Lago, Robert, who doesn't really read comics. He reads Walking Dead.
Mm-hmm.
And Lucifer was something that he picked himself and just blew through all 11 trades.
Oh, that's great.
Just loved it, yeah.
Well, Mike Carey is probably the best writer that the fewest amount of people really know about and really can appreciate his work, because I do think he is as good as all of the great Vertigo writers.
I really enjoyed his Hellblazer run.
Yeah, and I mean, and Lucifer, of course, and now, you know, doing great work on the X-Books for Marvel. But and Peter Milligan's another guy like that too. His Human Target was such a great series for Vertigo, and that's another series that is collected now.
Yeah, so I think both those guys definitely fall into the under-recognized. I think there are, you know, a lot of folks out there that maybe get a little bit too much hype, and those are guys that
don't get enough.
Yeah. Don't get enough. I think Joe Kelly was Joe one of those guys.
Sure. Joe Kelly having a most amazing year.
Well, I think he was one of those guys, but I think people are starting to realize that Joe Kelly is the real deal.
Oh, yeah.
He's starting to turn into a guy that people look for, I think.
Well, Milligan had a lot of promise and a lot of hype back in the day. Then he disappeared for a while, and his stuff was kind of, except for like X-Force, X-Statics.
Oh, man, that stuff was great.
Then his output decreased and the quality decreased, but now that he's back, he's doing Hellblazer right now, which is the best it's been in quite a while.
I agree with that.
No offense to Andy Diggle. It's super accessible. It's the sales, our club numbers have tripled in the last couple issues with that, so that's cool. Fantastic. And, you know, he's got Greek Street, and he's doing something else too that I can't think of.
Yeah, I can't either, actually.
If only I worked at a comic store.
who's writing the Unwritten? Isn't he writing
No, that's Mike Carey.
Oh, that's Mike Carey.
Yeah.
Is it one of the Vertigo times? Is it the... not? Unwritten is the Christopher Robin kind of pastiche.
Yes. Okay.
Because he did announce another book at the Vertigo panel.
But I mean, it's good to see him back on form.
Yeah. Cool.
Speaking of Diggle, you looking forward to the switchover on Daredevil?
Yeah, I think so. Yeah.
Time for, you know, new direction. Is he going to take it in a different direction? I haven't seen any.
I don't think he is.
No, he's actually rooting it firmly in the middle of Dark Reign. So it's going to be a lot more Marvel Universe, a lot more superhero-y.
Really?
Okay.
And I was worried because they announced Roberto Di La Torre as the artist, and they've announced him as the artist on a lot of things that just never follow through. But the pages they've shown, it looks like he's the love child of Michael Lark and Alex Maleev.
Oh, wonderful.
And wow. The pages look great. Yeah,
they're keeping the tone
there.
That's
huge.
Yeah, it looks like it.
But they're rooting it deep in the Marvel U.
He is now, Norman Osborn goes after him because he's an unlicensed hero. And his one-shot Daredevil of the list leads directly into what they're doing on their regular
run. I can see Daredevil being, you know, a really big,
high profile,
a really big, important target.
As Osborn
continues
Captain
to take over the
fucking
world.
I have to disagree because I must tell you that once again, and it was reinvigorated for me by the last few books that I've gotten from Marvel for the last 2 weeks. Dark Reign is a very good event that works for
everyone. It's not an event.
Well, then a good status quo.
It's
And Alex, if you're being, I don't know if you're teasing when you say it's not an event.
I'm being absolutely. It's not an event.
I think it works as a general Marvel Universe idea that each book can plug into and find its way. And I don't know how Andy's Diggle's going to be, because on the one hand, I love things like The Losers and some of his harder edge stuff, but then I wasn't a big fan of his Green Arrow Year One, I have to be honest.
I thought that was fun. I didn't really care that much for his Thunderbolts.
Okay. I mean, that's the thing. So, I mean, I am optimistic, and I certainly will be on for the ride. And 9 out of 10 times, I do like Andy stuff, but...
The Losers. We'll see. Losers is still one of my favorite all-time comics.
Oh, it's amazing.
Incredible.
Yeah. My worry about the Dark Reign thing is, if when you make Norman Osborn the villain in every book... like only one guy gets to beat him.
Yeah,
like
you've got
30 monthly comics with the same villain.
The whole point of the Punisher series is he's hunting down. The whole point of the brand new Moon Knight series is Moon Knight comes to hunt him down, and none of them are going to do it.
Yeah,
And now they're saying, "Oh, Captain America being reborn. It's Captain America coming back." That's going
to It's going to be Peter.
It has to be.
If
it's not Peter, it's horribly disappointing.
Well, yeah. Again, I just think the shades of what we're seeing in the, and maybe because I'm focusing a lot too on Bendis's books like Dark Avengers, New Avengers, and
Dark Avengers. I had so little hope for, and it was really good up to like the first four issues. Great, the newest issue.
I still like it.
Back to the same meandering. Oh, look, it's a Marvel Boy cover, and he's not even in the book at all. He's mentioned as being missing.
But it is that kind of dramatic device where everyone is talking about Marvel Boy, and it's coming.
It's
so
true.
I understand what you're saying, but I would also point out that this is being written for a trade, and this issue,
I'm not buying it as a trade, and that bothers me. And the last two issues, the Dark Avengers haven't really been in it. There was a two-page spread where they fought amongst themselves, which was great, and I want more of. I absolutely love Hawkeye. I think he's such a great character.
Oh, Bullseye is Hawkeye's very cool.
He's great in his own book. He's better in Deadpool, and he's even better than that in the Elektra book. This from last week. Man, that stuff is so good. Zeb Wells writes him as such a mean badass, but such very minimal dialogue, but the dialogue is just cutting.
And by the way, another good miniseries from Diggle. I like what he's doing with Bullseye Sakai in that series.
But that each issue gets less good to me.
But Dark Avengers, I'll disagree and say that the most recent issue to me, what I loved was the whole idea of wish fulfillment. If you haven't read it, there's a force of Atlanteans that are attacking. And Norman, I maybe because I wasn't a big Thunderbolts reader, but I like the idea of how do villains approach a superhero problem and how do they solve it. And I liked Norman's, and there's certainly his solution where there's a definite line to wish fulfillment on the War on Terror in terms of wipe them all out except for one guy, and the one guy that's left, we're going to torture the shit out of him and make his life and leave him as an example of you don't fuck with us. And I love that. I think that's great. It's a great Marvel Universe spin on the War on Terror.
The issue before ended with the giant Atlantean invasion in L.A.
Yes.
This issue starts. Oh, it's over, and they just retreated. Like, what were they? Attacking?
I thought it started with them setting up. Okay, you're going to take care of it. They dispatched the sentry.
But the invasion already, like, they just came, wreaked havoc, and took off. Mm-hmm. They weren't terrorizing anymore. They had gone away.
This is why I don't call it an event, and it's really just kind of a status quo for the universe. Is that you don't pick up Dark Reign number one and say continued in Captain America.
It's not, you don't go from
and then continued in Amazing Spider-Man.
It's basically the status quo for the Marvel Universe.
It just is there.
There's, no, I agree.
And so whenever 39 Marvel books drop in 1 week. I didn't buy any of them because I didn't know where I could jump into any of the books that were out there. I know a lot of them were probably self-contained.
Just say we did better this past week than we did that week with 39 Marvel books?
It's overwhelming.
Yeah.
Well, and the only other thing I will say is that I've just begun a new Bendis Tapes session. And I made sure to ask him. I said, "How long is the status quo going to last?" And he said, "There is an end in mind." And I have a feeling, while he wouldn't commit to a date, I am guessing early 2010.
And there's something that he said right away was the second Norman got into power, the clock started ticking as to when it was going to end. So he's always on a decline. So at least I feel more than ever they have an end game.
But to Marvel's credit, they haven't billed this as an event.
Yes, it's you're just, right. It's that's just status quo.
They didn't put out a checklist.
I mean, they put Dark Reign on the top of every book they put out. That's event E.
but they're not billing it as...
It's a marketing tool, and it gets people like, do you have like the first Dark Reign? I don't even know what the answer to that question is, man. I don't. Civil War?
No, that would be the Skrull Secret Invasion, whatever the last issue of that was, Dark Reign 1.
Well, but I would say it's that Maliv
Dark Reign, but Cabal, yeah.
Yeah, the Cabal issue is really where it starts, where
with
Norman
the,
is
the
like.
Phil Collins Submariner. Yeah.
Now, you see, I said he looked like if Bruce Willis and Robert De Niro had a bald baby.
There you go.
Because, yeah, it was crazy. I know. Everyone shits on Maliv for that look.
One thing I wanted to see for this whole event was I want Hawkeye to start dressing as Bullseye and going saving kittens out of trees and helping the ladies across the street.
Nice, yeah.
Because that's better than going on TV saying, hey, they're jerks. Like, no, take away everything Bullseye's earned and see what happens.
I think there have been incredible conversations of a lucid Norman Osborn, a calculating Norman Osborn. There's always room for a new master criminal in my world. And I think I never thought of Norman that way.
He was always a Spidey villain.
Right, and always kind of a loner.
And yeah, he is Lex Luthor. He is the Marvel Universe's Lex Luthor. I got no
green
problem with
and purple.
It. And I think it's
exactly.
I think it's interesting. And I love we mentioned Joe Kelly. I love American Sun right now in Amazing Spider-Man.
Oh, it's really good.
It's an
although
incredible
I got to be honest, as soon as I saw that armor, I thought it's Flash Thompson, war hero, can't use his legs anymore. Doesn't have his legs. Put him in the suit. He's the new American hero.
You might be right.
And but
well, I didn't read number. I didn't need to read.
No, it's not. It's Harry.
Oh, it is.
Yeah,
Harry.
It, okay. it's been Harry from
spoiler. Well,
he did I'm say. Not,
but it's been. They said it was Harry from issue one of that story.
Oh, okay.
So it's they're not deviating. But mm-hmm. I thought like, oh man, this is your poster child for the American Sun storyline. But no,
wounded
it's
vet comes back.
Yeah.
Exactly. Yeah.
Seems like you're lucky if it ever changed from red to green. Well, I was born in an abundance of inherited sadness. And 50 cent picture frames bought at a five and dime. I ended up a soldier on a weekend. Looking for a vacancy I wasn't able to find.
Marvel does have an event right now. That is really kick-ass.
The War of Kings?
War of Kings is
that,
phenomenal.
Does that have... So what books are going into that? It's Guardians of the Galaxy
and Nova.
What else? Nova?
Guardians
so
of the Galaxy, Nova, and then
how does it
a
work?
Miniseries called Ascension.
I've been thinking... I've never read a crossover that works. History of comics that's worked.
This actually works pretty well, because I'm only reading two of the books. I'm reading the War of Kings miniseries, and I'm reading Guardians of the Galaxy.
What happened to Nova?
I read Nova in trade.
Okay.
Actually, I read it in hardcover.
Okay.
So I'm not reading Nova. Don't feel like I've missed anything. There's another one called War of Kings Ascension.
First it was Darkhawk, then it was Ascension became the Darkhawk, the reason behind Darkhawk in the mystery.
And they kind of allude that there's bigger story there. They kind of show you the tip of the iceberg in War of Kings as to what their motivation is. It's not absolutely integral to the story. What's nice about it is that this is pretty much, is it all being written by Abnett and Lanning? Are they doing all the War of Kings titles?
No, they're like there's one coming out this week called Warriors. I don't think it's them.
But I mean, it's pretty single minded in its direction. If you read whenever the War of Kings miniseries comes out in trade, pick it up. It's a really fun Marvel cosmic.
And it's gorgeous. It's Paul Pelletier in the art.
Oh, uh-huh. It's
yes. is that how you say it, Pelletier?
Yeah, Pelletier. Yeah. He's great.
If you like the Byrne Claremont era cosmic X-Men with the whole Dark Phoenix stuff, you'll dig this. It's all about the Shi'ar and the Kree. If you're an Inhumans fan, really
issue
fun.
Number one of War of Kings is one of the most brutal books I've read this whole year because nonstop action, ridiculously high body count, things you can't go back from. Amazing.
And can you just read Guardians of the Galaxy? In the most recent issue, it says to be continued in War of Kings number 3, and then come back for Guardians of the Galaxy, whatever. And it's that sort of thing. It works fine on a week to week basis as you're like, if you're following all that stuff, your brain can handle it. But next year, if I want to sit down
think
and
about
read
it like this,
you can't read, never read a crossover.
It's a space opera, and it operates like a soap opera. You can pick it up, and it doesn't take long to get the gist of it.
Tuesdays and Thursdays are one story. Monday, Wednesday, Friday are a different arc.
You can be reading just Nova. You can read just Guardians. You can read just the War of Kings. It's all just fun Marvel cosmic. It's really, really good stuff.
Chris, I think you're doing it right. I mean, I think War of Kings is the best. Guardians is a great, great book. Mm-hmm. Nova's a good book, too. But if you had to pick one of those ongoings, Guardians is the one.
Guardians.
Guardians
absolutely.
And Captain Britain are two of my favorite books that Marvel is doing, and they just
love
came
Captain
out of nowhere, and with no hype and no ceremony or circumstance at all. And one of them lived.
Well, and
so far.
You gotta hand it to Bill Roseman, who's been editing this stuff. It took over for Andy Schmidt after he started the first event, and I'm blanking on
Annihilation. Which were all great. Annihilation and Annihilation Conquest. I love those.
This is I consider this Annihilation 3.
Yeah.
It's Act 3. It's Act 3 of all that.
And that's great. I think both of the big two have gotten their big space opera corners of their universe, you know, they're doing very well. I mean, each one of them is good stuff right now.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Mr. Burnham?
Let's see. Both Batman and Robin 2 and Savage Dragon 150 absolutely blew me away.
Yeah, they were great.
For 100 pages for
$6.99.
$5.99. And one reprint. It was Savage Dragon Zero
and a Daredevil reprint too
that no one's ever read
before. Oh yeah, right. Yeah,
Golden Age.
Yes,
Love Gleason story.
Yeah, Daredevil 18,
little,
I guess.
The little wise guys, were they in there too?
A little bit,
not okay. So much.
Well, that's good because that's the best kind of Daredevil is when those little shits aren't around. Quite frankly,
yeah, that story is fucking crazy. It's really some goofy shit.
When Eric was here,
it's a little mini trade for $6.
Yeah, seriously, that guy knows what value is. You know. So much fun. But when he was here back in May for Free Comic Day, he was just finishing up that, and he was trying to decide. He's like, you know, I want to make it another 100-page. But it was going to be like 64 pages, but I want to do 100. Like, do it. He's like, well, there'll be a reprint. I'm like, do it. Just do it. Yep. It'll be fun. And I'm not saying I had anything to do with it, but...
Push him over the edge, cool, man. Take credit for it, man.
You know, he could have rounded out with photos from his Free Comic Day event here at Challengers, but apparently it chose not to
happen.
But there were like four jaw-dropping... moments in that
the
book.
Holy shit moments. Yeah,
holy shit. Like, the great thing about Savage Dragon is that Eric Larson has 100% control over that. So when when he kills those people, they are never coming back in some sort of stupid fake out. Like, he killed some great characters
unless
that
he really
issue.
Wants to, and then he can.
Yeah, but he's not going
he
to.
Doesn't yeah, he doesn't. And literally, once he kills
dead
them, they're
dead.
Out of his mind. Yeah,
yeah, dead is dead.
Just jaw dropping, and then like. That weird when that blob guy ate him and then like turned into him, I kind of thought that was a toss off sort of thing. But man, that's coming back in a really weird way.
I thought that was just going to be a way to he can reach. That's why he's not, because the whole part of that issue was you're in your 40s now, Dragon. Your body's going to start slowing down. All of a sudden, nope, he's young and rejuvenated again. No,
I don't know what the hell they're going to do with it.
But you know, it's cool because if you go back to probably issue 147 was kind of a great jumping on point.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
It
was the right before the Free Comic Book Day issue.
Yeah.
So 147, and then jump forward, and you're right into the middle of Dragon's universe again.
He really does a good job of making jump on points all the time, but people don't seem to pick it up. Dragon is doing better for us now after Free Comic Day because of the Free Comic issue. But it's not doing what it used to do. And I don't mean here. I mean, like, it's numbers all across the board.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. It's,
but,
you know,
it deserves
to be. But he's back to doing it on a regular schedule. So I think Dragon's numbers will increase.
Let's hope.
And he's always going to do that book. But hey, I want to talk about Batman and Robin, too, because just about a perfect comic.
That comic reel, that Frank Quitely.
Oh, he's so good.
Can draw the shit out of some comics.
It's just so sad. He's only doing the first three, and then he's gone for 6 months, and then back for three more.
I think you just got to rejoice in what you get. When you're dealing with a guy that
his storytelling, his layouts, the full page splash when they're going down the stairwell,
oh my god,
the way their bodies are arced, oh my god,
and when they're landing on that roof, and how, oh my god, just the specificity of how that dude handles time, because Robin was ahead of Batman, so Robin's cape is already collapsing, but Batman's is still
out and below.
Oh my
god.
Although I will say, to bust his balls for two panels in the whole book, there's two parts in the book where his specificity fails him, shall we say. When Robin's fighting that big fat man woman, there's one panel where it's very unclear how exactly she got the drop on Robin.
I think just because the way her body swung around,
his
arm. I just want to call him the fat lady, like the show.
It's
a bearded lady from a show, though.
Well, yeah, but what's the name? It's like a big top or something like that. It's crazy cast of
it should have been Herm, like Herman, Hermaphrodite is what it should have been. But,
I think just the way that his body, because of the motion, just like he can't stop, and the arm just came around like a club and nailed him.
Yeah, that's when I think.
But that I had to interpret.
Sometimes a speed line is helpful, but Quitely so good he doesn't use them when he doesn't have to. But I think I feel like that panel he should have, and the last panel was kind of a clusterfuck, but whatever.
I'm a little disappointed with his art for this series because it's a lot scratchier and rougher than it usually is.
Well, it's a Batman book.
But, I compare it to All-Star Superman.
It's a Batman book.
It looks it's not as finished to me, and I was willing to accept that, thinking that this is, because it's looser. And I was willing to accept that, thinking that's what we had to deal with, because he's going to be doing a monthly book. But then to find out he's not doing it.
Yeah.
Have they announced who's drawing?
Yeah, it's Philip Tan for the three after this. And then Frazier Irving for three.
Nice.
And then back to...
Well, if Frazier Irving's going to be... Are there going to be any, like, really whacked out pilgrims?
Maybe albinos. Does that...
whacked out, I albino pilgrims.
Frazier Irving is drawing the first issue of Days Missing, the book that I'm doing.
And who's
the second
issue
too?
Oh, that's right.
And
Chris Burnham.
What's weird is that like the main dude of that book is kind of an albino. He's got that fucking
and is Guttsville ever going to be finished?
I wouldn't hold your breath. Although
that's Frazier Irving, right?
Yeah, that book is really good.
What just came out last week was one of Jonathan Hickman's books from Images that's been over a year.
Oh, Red Master Mars.
Red Master Mars. Yeah. So if that can come out, maybe Guttsville.
Guttsville is so good.
What I like about Batman and Robin right now is it is the Dick Grayson book that I think all of the Nightwing fans were fearful would disappear. And it still is Dick Grayson, and you feel it, and I think you feel it in Quietly's art, and I also think you feel it in Grant's story because just the weight on his shoulders, and just that this whole idea that he is playing Batman, but it's Dick's. This is Dick's story.
And what a great scene with he and Alfred. It's a performance.
Yep. Or when
the
they
show
were
must go on.
Police headquarters, and like, were they shorter than before?
Yeah. Or even just Gordon's noticed that, you know, he sounds different. He's like, yeah, different.
I've heard that voice.
Exactly. Yeah. So, yeah, I'm glad that Gordon is kind of in on it in his own way, too.
And Damian, what a shit.
Oh, yeah, man.
Well, and even more so, I keep forgetting he's 10 years old. So yeah. now you really just want to punch the little shit.
Oh, but that bit when he breaks the arm, holy crap. That really hurt to look at, man. Oh, and when they're fighting that. He's traveling. Oh man, what a great ridiculous comic!
This is the book
that makes people not want Bruce Wayne back ever.
This is probably the most accessible comic Grant Morrison has ever written, I would say. I mean, and I love the shit out of some Grant Morrison, but yeah. I mean, you can't say this is too weird for you.
With All Star Superman. I mean, that's the thing.
I think that's a little weird for some people. This is fucking Batman, and it's awesome.
Yeah, but half this book was in a foreign carny language, so.
Well, yeah, but see, Dick is an old carny, so it's okay. So of course, and I totally missed the Wind in the Willows references in the first one because I'm dense. So.
Well, it wasn't blatant. It wasn't Frog and Toad. It was. Toad and Pig.
And Pig, yeah.
So, but totally missed that. So, all right. Well, I tell you what, we've got a little phone call to make here. We're going to talk with Mr. Jeff Parker. So, hold on. We'll be right back. This portion of Around Comics is brought to you by Netflix. Right now, you can start a free 2-week trial by going to www.netflix.com/aroundcomics. At Netflix, you'll find over 100,000 titles to choose from, including classics and new releases, as well as TV series. Plans start from as low as $4.99 per month, and you can keep each movie as long as you want with no late fees ever. Netflix has free shipping both ways, and you can expect your next selection to be delivered in about one business day. Now watch some movies and TV series over the internet for no extra charge. I use this service with my Xbox 360 and personal laptop. We've dated a couple times, and I think it's progressing nicely. So head over to www.netflix.com/aroundcomics and get started with your free trial today. Mr. Jeff Parker, how you doing?
Hey, I'm great.
It's good to hear from you. This is a long overdue interview by us. Now I know that that John has talked with you several times, but we've been talking about your books for a couple years now, and you've been one of our favorite writers, and we've just never made the effort.
It just now occurred to you to call me and say, "Hey, Jeff could be on the podcast."
We could talk to him. He's okay.
We love you so much as a writer.
I'm just sitting here not in pants, right?
That's podcast. Even better.
So are we. Is that fair? No, we just figured that anytime we'd take to talk to you, we'd be taking you away from writing great, great stories, and we didn't want to deprive the world of that.
Well, thank you.
Smart guy.
You guys do a good podcast, by the way. You already know that.
Well, thank you. I appreciate it. Actually, Sal and Tom aren't even here.
It's going to be better than ever, sir.
That's right.
Hell yeah.
It's Around Comics version 2.0. Well, Jeff, most people by now should know your work from Agents of Atlas, which we have talked about ad nauseum on the show.
Thank you.
It's been one of our favorite books, and we actually had the pleasure a couple times of having Don Glut on the show. And,
oh, really?
Yeah. Don is a native Chicagoan and lives out in California now, but he comes back to visit Chicago occasionally and likes to drop by and sit in with us. And so we had a lot of fun talking about the what if the Avengers formed in the 1950s story that was kind of the inspiration for Agents of Atlas. And I know that you just talked with John about this a little bit, but if you want to talk about how that great old what if story played into building the Agents of Atlas.
Yeah, it's my editor Mark Panicha was looking at that comic one day. He was trying to figure out something neat that we could do, you know, just because he and I were starting to get on a real roll working together from the Marvel Adventures books and some other odd stuff that no one read and he saw that and sent it to me and then just asked if I could come up with something of that and yeah, just like, oh boy, once I saw that, I had read it years ago, but I wasn't thinking about it, and once I saw the robot and the gorilla and everything, I went, yep, this is totally it.
Alright, but I don't know, maybe it's just me and when I was born and my love of that comic, but no 3D Man?
Tell him, Jeff.
Yep. We can't have 3D Man.
Oh, hey, Jeff hates 3D Man.
I've heard of your hate of 3D Man.
Actually, it was just a disdain, and now it's grown into a hate over the years, or at least that's the way it has on the internet. But it's like, now it's funny, and it's like, oh no, I'd ruin it if I actually suddenly put 3D Man because I've made such a big deal on not having 3D Man.
Sure. Well, but, you know, M11 has turned
He puts me in an epileptic fit. Just in that red green costume. I can't look at it. It messes me up.
And you can't kill him off because he becomes triathlon, so you really need him alive.
Triathlon, he's two people in one. That gets you more people on the team you didn't need.
That's right.
It's just a lot. But mainly the thing was the fact that once I went back and read Woots, and thank you for saying his name. I've always said Glut, and I should have known that's not right. God, now I've got to correct that every time I say it. But reading the original story, you know, once I saw they had Nemora in there, yeah. I was like, Nemora? I was like, well, wait a second, then you could get another girl on the team, and a really cool girl who can pick up submarines and throw them.
Nice.
And yeah, 3D Man just kind of couldn't hang with Nemora.
That's true. Well, you know, it is a great team, and the fact that it does pull from a lot of historical characters in Marvel's history is awesome, but what I love about it is that it really does harken back to those great, like, 60s espionage and kind of not the really dark and gritty ones, but really the more, it's not Get Smart, but it's just a couple of steps away from that, and I love
like
that.
Almost like the original Ocean's 11. I mean, it's a caper book, and that's the fun of it.
We have lots of capers and heists constantly, which are just, you know, and instead of Dean Martin, you got an ape. You know, it's fairly easy to switch out. But and it is. I love that stuff. Like the first, I think I remember as a kid, my parents would go to the drive-in and they would watch the old James Bond movies because they'd be rerunning them cheap at the drive-in. Mm-hmm. So I'd see Dr. No and From Russia with Love and all that stuff as a kid. I didn't understand it. I was always interrupting, going, "What did that mean?" Blah blah blah, and they're shh. But, you know, it's just that and Johnny Quest and everything was just really hardwired into my head.
So when are the Agents of Atlas going to all get turned into MODOKs? We've all been waiting for that to happen.
I think that's probably going to be issue 17, but nice. I'm not sure yet. But don't worry. rest assured.
What I love about the series is that you've got a handful of recognizable names. And in the case of the original Marvel Boy, there is a lot of continuity that you can lean on, but in a lot of cases, like the Human Robot and Gorilla Man, these were one-shot stories, and Marvel is just now, and I was thinking about this as Brubaker's Marvel's project is starting to come out, and of course, The 12 by J. Michael Straczynski, they're just scratching the surface and really exploring their Golden and Silver Age characters, their pre-Marvel Age characters, and it's a blank slate. So
it really is. There's just tons of room to go with there. There's a lot of neat characters from back then.
You know, I'm having a lot of fun over on the DC side of stuff, reading James Robinson's work. Back reading, you know, the Starman omnibuses, which are coming out now, and even the stuff that he's doing in mainline DC. And you both have a really nice feel for mining the history of the companies and pulling out those really cool bits that, you know, and reinventing them for a new generation. And I really respect that. But what I feel, maybe in your work more than maybe even more than James's or anybody else, is that you know that comics are supposed to be fun. Whenever I sit down to read a Jeff Parker book, I know I'm going to have a big shit-eaten grin on my face by the end of it. And that's something I love about your work.
Oh, thank you. Let people know too. That doesn't necessarily mean there won't be sadness or some ugly stuff in there, but that stuff can still be fun.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I don't want to make it all, especially Agents of Atlas, isn't particularly lighthearted like, say, X-Men First Class or something like that was. It's it can be heavy, but at the same time, it's like I like to embrace all the real fantastic elements. It's like, yeah, we could have Namor pop up in this, but can we just go to Atlantis, you know, or yeah, or Oceanus, as we described it, and you know, and just see how they live and see kind of how freaky that is and explore stuff like that. To me, it's all about the adventure, you know, and mixing genres, as I've said to John a lot. You know, it's like we can turn on a dime and suddenly we're in a crime story,
mm-hmm,
or then it's a pure science fiction story, or it's a mystery. And really, you can do that in all of them, but it works really well with Agents of Atlas.
Sure, and you can have some heavier moments in it, but at the end of the day, it's still a book that has a wisecracking, talking gorilla.
Gotta exactly. Gotta love Ken.
It can get heavy, but that gorilla's still the one delivering a lot of the lines in it.
Yeah. And I love the character that you've developed with him, because he really has turned into the wisecrack on the team, and I love his parts. And the one of my favorite lines the last month or so is whenever they find Namor and Namora kissing, and what was his line? I guess they have hillbillies under the sea too.
Yeah, he's the character that will always go there. So whatever you're thinking, he's just going to go ahead and say it. Ken gets a good, I was a little worried maybe we're playing him for laughs too much, but it's like, it's too, you know, tempting to have him say just almost anything. But, so in the next issue, in issue 8, when they run into the Hulk, it becomes a real good kind of showcase for Ken.
Nice.
So I look forward to seeing what you think of that.
Well, looking forward to it.
And I would point out another book that you're combining comedy and extreme scenes in is Exiles, briefly I want to acknowledge that, because there's a book that right now is in the midst of its first story still, and you've got this crazy splash at the back of the book, the final image, and I don't want to tip
that. Was kind of nasty, wasn't it?
Yeah, and there's an example of a lot of wisecracking going on in the midst of some pretty horrific scenes, and I'm passing one right now to Chris to show it to him. But
holy shit!
And it's also a good. I like to rely on my reputation of, hey, Jeff's going to make this story happy and okay, to really sucker somebody and then drop something on them like that. So it's, yeah, what he's talking about is you see Polaris essentially dissected in this lab, in all her parts. Just kind of, she's vivisected and she's just all over the place, and it's kind of gross.
By Joe Costa.
Yeah, on this alternate world, the power behind the power, I guess, is the Vision, Ultron, and Joe Costa working together.
Is that how you
and
say
Machine
that,
and Machine Man, excuse me, I forgot about Machine Man.
Well, and yes, they're answering to Cerebro.
Ah, there you go.
Okay.
And hey, if you notice, let's see which sci-fi nerd of you picked up on Cerebro's logo. Well, now I'm thinking, am I getting ahead of myself? Is that Nick? Or did I actually show it?
I don't know. I don't remember. I mean, that's.
I'm looking at 3 and 4, and 4 is obviously you got the payoff.
Did you ever see the movie Colossus, the Forman Project?
Yeah, I have. Of course,
John has.
Of course, you have. everybody leave the room. This is just between me and John. John and I are going
to
talk for a minute.
It's a great late anyway,
welcome to Word Balloon, everyone.
The project is about this. It was in the 60s. It was a book about this computer system. It was essentially the Americans were coming up with their supercomputer system that was going to be tied into the missile systems, and they're racing against the Russians or whatever, and they get theirs online first. So, and theirs is called Colossus. And Colossus wastes almost no time in just kind of taking over the country. As soon as he gets intelligent, he immediately deems that only he should be calling the shots. And he as soon as the Russian system Guardian comes online, Colossus merges with it and kind of takes it over and essentially brings the whole world to a halt. And
fucking
you know,
computers.
We're, since we're playing with a world where robots seem to have taken over, I thought, it's like, that's especially with Cerebro's name, I asked Casey Jones if we could do this logo and pretty much really referenced the heck out of that movie.
That's hilarious. Nice. I didn't even think of that, and it's one of my favorite movies. It's the guy, Victor, from The Young and the Restless. German actor.
Braden. He's from Young and Restless, and he's in Titanic. Eric Braden.
Yes.
Oh, okay.
And, yeah,
or
he's
maybe Rat Patrol.
And yes, he's in Rat Patrol, and he's in the third Planet of the Apes movies when Cornelius and Zira come to the modern times.
Yeah,
and he's the one who's
the
like
son of a bitch. He's the one who gets Cornelius killed at the end.
Yep, because he's like if you know the it's fantastic and really Colossus the Forbid Project is one of these awesome sci-fi movies.
I'd like to actually rip that story off some because I read through the books and sadly the books aren't really that good. but they had a really neat premise where, like in the second of the series, they finally found a way to shut down Colossus. I think the way it goes is the Colossus takes over. The second of the series, they shut him down and defeat him. But then in the third book, they start becoming suddenly Martians are invading the Earth, and they have to turn Colossus on because they need him to combat the Martians. Like. That is exactly the kind of story I like. You know, I wish it were better written, but
I'm still
going to
rip
that
off. Hey, before we move on from Agents of Atlas, I want to go back real quick because Gabe Hardman is an old friend of the show, and we actually met Gabe, gosh, I want to say 3 years ago at a New York Comic Con and saw, I think he was actually showing work for his Heathentown book at the time, and then we got to know Gabe, and actually he was a guest on the show back when Spider-Man 3 came out because he was working storyboards and worked with Sam Raimi on that. I just want to say, first of all, thank you if you had anything to do with getting Gabe on the Agents of Atlas book, and I just absolutely love his work on that book. It is so good to see him working on something like that.
In my mind, he's the near-perfect artist for the book. He's just, I mean, and the only reason I say near is just because I really like some of the other guys we've had.
Sure.
Obviously, Carlo Pagliaian just always knocks it out of the park. But there's really nothing Gabe can't do. I mean, he can match every tone that we bring in. I just love the way he depicts all the characters. And it's funny, I always tend to push towards horror once he comes on because I know he likes horror.
Oh, yeah.
And, and it's just like, and I get so excited, like, when I see my email and know that he's sending in some roughs or pages. It's like, oh, man. The guy's just phenomenal.
Gabe's awesome. Gabe is awesome.
And it's hard to... Because, you know, he's got a lot of big-budget movies that he's working on at the same time. He works with Ron Howard a lot. I think Ron Howard calls him for almost everything he does. And it's why his stuff is such clear cinematic storytelling all the way through. I mean, you just really feel like you're getting a big epic in scope when it calls for it, story every time.
So
I can't say enough good things about Gabe.
Do you ever call Gabe and talk with him and you're going over scripts and pages and he's like, oh, hold on, I got Ron Howard on the other one. I'll have to let you go, Jeff.
It hasn't happened yet, but I imagine it will happen at some point. He's a lot of fun to talk to, and he's one of those guys too. We'll like Suntree's there. He knows more movies than you know.
Yeah.
So you bring it up and he's gonna start going off on a tangent or whatever. I want to do another. I did the little writer versus artist column on CBR,
mm-hmm.
and I've done a few of those. And I'd like to do Gabe again, just because we can get on movies, and he can just expound. He's got great stuff to say about all these directors.
Well, and he knows.
I'd also like to do a Glenn Ford sort of takeoff with him and stuff. I mean, just like a John Ford. I'm sorry, not Glenn.
I was going to say what Glenn Ford, what John Ford for that matter.
I'd love to get a Western in there somehow with him.
Ooh, that'd be cool.
Hey,
yeah.
Hey, the Atlas Foundation is everywhere, man. You can put those.
They are
guys
everywhere. That's the nice thing. It lets us set up almost anywhere we want to.
Yeah, go back in time.
Certainly, they have a ranch.
go back in time and let's see Two Gun Kid and Rawhide Kid and Kid Colton, all these guys, all the kids, all the cowboy kids.
Every kid, yeah.
Make all of them gay.
They're all gay. They're all kids.
Do you ever just ask him what he wants to draw that way, and it helps you decide where the direction of the story is going to go?
Yeah, I actually did. Like when we first started working, going back to when you said getting him in there, Gabe had just sent a new batch of samples or something up at Marvel over a year ago. And Panicia and I just jumped all over it. We were immediately just trying to get him on whatever we could. And so the first thing he and I worked on was the Monster Size Hulk special.
Oh, yeah.
Which was perfect for Gabe because it was going to be Hulk and the Frankenstein monster. It's like, well, he could do this in his sleep. I asked him to give me a list of just things he likes. And, you know, at first he knew he was going to be doing the 50s parts of Agents of Atlas. And I said, what are just some 50s stuff you would love to draw? And pretty much everything he sent back on the list I already had worked up in my little rough of the script.
Nice.
I said, okay, I can do that. And it was all, you know, big brassy cars, women wearing hats, and cool sunglasses and
beehive hairdos.
Everything, you know, beatniks, all that stuff. And I can almost always fit. I love when artists will do that and just say, can I draw these things? Because then it kind of gives me a challenge to, like, is there a way I can put this into the story?
your book is one of the first Marvel books that is employing the backup stories as well as having the lead story. And what I like about those in particular, Jeff, is that those backup stories are playing out in the main story later on. And we're seeing that again in the most current issue. But the earliest issue was in issue one of Agents of Atlas. You had the flashback to Wolverine. And then during that confrontation with the new Avengers, all of a sudden the human robot remembers that and attacks Wolverine at that crucial moment when Spider-Man was maybe about to blow their cover and go, wait a minute.
Yeah.
I think something's wrong with these guys. And then, boom, they attack Wolverine.
We don't waste any pages. Like, if you think you can skip over a backup story, you can't, because it's all in there for a reason.
Sure.
You know, like, even like we like to do the text pages too.
Yes.
They're awesome. You have the best recap pages at Marvel.
I wish I could take credit for those, but a lot of those are either Nate Cosby or Lauren Sankovich coming in. I used to do them, but then it's like, oh, I got to go leave some fun for someone else, and then they're just so good at them. But a lot of times I'll do little things, like I did an extra kind of Bob fact page on the Atlanteans, or the thing with the warrior scholars where they're being asked by the young monks, because we don't have a place to do it in the comic book, but then we can, with text, you know, we can just kind of almost do like the old two-pagers and give you this little bit to kind of flesh it out some more. And I like thinking of all the monks down in the hidden city of Atlas, you know, like the young ones they're getting to ask questions for their lessons, and all they care about are asking is about the inner circle, which is Jimmy Woo's team. You know, so instead of asking about the history, they're immediately, how come Venus can breathe underwater? And so I kind of
Then does Venus not wear the complete suit?
Questions out of the way there too.
You know, I was reading the last issue, and I love the underground city that they're in, and that whole culture that you keep kind of dusting away layers as we get to learn about it. And I was like, man, there needs to be an Iron Fist crossover where they match up this with the lost city of Kunlun, which would be fun. So do that for me.
We haven't gotten. Expanded enough. In my mind, it all fits together really well.
Mm-hmm.
So as far as I'm concerned, yes, it would be very easy, for Forrest and Rand to come in. And but yes, I will try to do that.
Thank you. It's the Jeff Parker request hour now. So
it Jeff, really is. Just come on, tell me what you need to see next year in 2010 and...
No, Chris is right, though. That'd be perfect, because Orson Randall was Iron Fist in the 50s.
Mm-hmm.
Well, yes. And I'll point out one other thing, and that is you did an online text story about the Agents of Atlas. And I'm hoping eventually that's going to wind up in a trade or in a hardcover somewhere, because that was a nice little untold story.
I originally thought they were going to put it all in the first trade.
Mm-hmm.
But it's very – actually, when you print it out, it's really long.
Okay.
I mean, because that thing went on for a long time. It went on all over all the whole summer. So – yeah, maybe what we'll do, we've been meaning to do some kind of neat extra kind of exclusive thing, and maybe we'll just print that thing up and maybe get some illustrations or something for it, so that there is this little thing that people can get.
That'd be cool.
And thanks for reminding me, because somebody was writing into my website saying that they had gone through my stuff and compiled the story, but there are missing sections, and I still haven't had a chance to help them find that stuff, and so that would force me to get it all together.
There you go.
But I need to take kind of the puzzles out, because you don't need to be playing the game anymore.
Yeah, it was part of a treasure hunt, and actually you were nice enough to include Word Balloon in that treasure hunt.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh, very nice.
Yeah. It was very fun, and well, I was happy to help.
Yeah, you had to go on to John's site, and you had to click on the human robot head
to get a clue.
Yeah, you got a clue, and the clue was John saying something about Jimmy Woo. I don't remember what it was now.
I don't either, actually. Yeah, I know I put some Mission Impossible music behind us and everything when I was reading the clue.
It was cool though, and I liked having an audio clue, and clearly the people playing the game were having a whole lot of fun with it. That was really rewarding.
Very cool. Well, before we move on from Agents of Atlas, I would like to remind people that it was one of the nicest collected editions, the original miniseries, when it was the beautiful oversized hardcover, and it had the original What If story, and really, I think for that year, quietly one of the nicest collected editions that came out. So go pick that up.
Yeah, I really think that edition had a lot to do with people still being interested in us doing another story, just because they did such a sweet job on that book.
It was fantastic.
Well, the original miniseries was during Civil War, I want to say.
Yes, it was. That's why no one knew about it.
Yeah, I mean, no, and it was Jeff and Len Kirk.
We were completely buried in the froth of Civil War.
Yeah, and that's the thing. It was, and that's kind of been one of the testaments to your work, Jeff, I think, is that you're kind of flying under the radar, and that while everyone's involved with the big event, you were, you know, off in a corner, kind of the way Paul Cornell was recently with Captain Britain and MI-13, telling this amazing story that it didn't matter what the event was and everything. Meanwhile, you guys, you and Leonard, were doing this amazing miniseries, and I'm glad that it was able to finally be greenlit to an ongoing. Do you have – you're still on this extra issue schedule, am I correct?
I think for now, we may have one more double ship coming up, but I think we've gotten past most of them.
Okay.
And that's part of the reason we've been using, you know, switching between artists, because we've had this thing where suddenly every 2 weeks we're having Agents of Atlas. And
I
still don't understand it, but whatever. And I guess more is better than less.
There you go.
I wasn't complaining at all.
Normally I would be way ahead on the book, but I'm not nearly as far ahead as I would be because of that.
All right, but speaking of Underground, right? I've been seeing pages of this for years. I'm a convention acquaintance of Steve Lieber, so I've been claustrophobic looking at these goddamn pages. When's this thing coming out?
It is coming out in September.
Nice.
Wait No More. Yeah.
Yay.
Oh gosh, you know I'm a terrible host. We haven't recorded in a couple weeks. Jeff, I didn't introduce. We're sitting in with Chris Burnham is here.
Hey. The great Chris Burnham, hey, right, Jeff? So. I bought Inner Man off of you years ago at San Diego, and you thought I stole it. You were signing somewhere, and I bought it from whoever your sidekick was, and I brought it across the convention, and you were fairly convinced that I stole it from you.
Wow,
Chris, you can admit, did you?
An a-hole.
Yeah. I didn't steal that copy. I stole other copies of it though.
I hope I drew in it.
You did. It said, for Chris, you anything, even kill, I think. It's an attractive picture of a woman.
I mean it. Yeah, point me where, and I'll do it.
You say that to all the boys.
No, I really don't.
I thought it said, Chris, next time pay for this.
Right.
Or I will kill you.
How about some cash next time, Chris? I self-published this, which is why suddenly you notice with Underground, we're going to Image, because... self-publishing is a lot of work.
Really?
Yeah.
It's
very rewarding. I recommend everybody who's serious about comics as their career to try to do a little bit of self-publishing or be involved in some way, because you'll learn about how the whole industry is laid out. Just when you're trying to, everything you got to go through to the distributor diamond and all the stores and how to promote. It schools you like nothing else.
There's
no way I can keep up with filling orders after the fact once the book's already come out.
Yeah,
keep getting behind on Inner Man.
Yeah, you actually have to create the book, and then there's this whole other job of getting it made and then promoting it.
My breakdown of that is always, I think I can I think I can do two of the three things really well. I could either create it or promote it or publish it, but I don't think I can do all three as well. I need to just be doing two of those things.
Sure.
So now we're going to image so that I can, so that, you know, Steve and I can do just two of those things.
Well,
and, we'll let Image send it to the printer.
Well, speaking of Underground, it's one of the reasons that we want to talk with you. One of the great things about Twitter is that you get to see what creators are doing, what they're having for breakfast, that kind of stuff. But you also get
a lot of that, yeah.
but you also find out whenever really crappy things happen to them, like their house is getting broken into and burgled, and their laptop
stolen,
being stolen. And Steve Lieber had just that happen, and it was right at the height of the time that you guys needed to be promoting Underground. And so I was like, well, this is a perfect opportunity to finally talk to Jeff Parker. So that was
what timing, huh?
Yeah, so
thank you, thief.
yes, thank you for finally connecting me with Jeff Parker. What you didn't know is that I took a little trip to Portland to set all this up. So it's
can you return Steve's computer now?
He's done the interview.
He really needs it. But no, definitely tell us about Underground and what it's about and when it's going to be coming out.
It is coming out in September. It's a 5-issue series. Steve, this originally started with Steve. He wanted to do a caving story. He wanted, I think it was from after, you know, he did Whiteout, constantly figuring out how to depict snow in different ways. I think he was really ready to get somewhere where he could use his ink and make shadows again. So he was researching a lot of cave stuff, and then I know a lot of people think, well, hey, you're just going to another female lead with Wesley Fisher, like you did with Carrie Stetko in Whiteout. But Steve came to that conclusion first because simply a small woman is the perfect caver. You know, caving is not for big lunkheads like us, even though we do it. Yeah, it's really better for wiry women because they can get in all these crevasses and squeeze through this stuff and climb up a rock wall much more nimbly.
I'm suddenly turned on hearing this.
So anyway, he was trying to put this together. He did a short story in the anthology Four Letter Worlds for Image a few years ago. I had one in the same thing called Bear, and that was a kind of grown-up Winnie the Pooh thing. And so then he started getting into it. He kept talking about it, what he wanted to do. And then Chris, he came crawling to me on his hands and knees.
Are you saying that's what I should be doing?
Oh, God. How does anyone write a story? Oh, it's the worst thing in the world, Jeff Parker. Can you please save me, save my career? And I said, okay, Steve, for you, because you're a friend. And then, maybe it wasn't quite so humble like that. But anyway, he said
Rucka turned him down, and so you were his second choice.
Yeah, Rucka turned him down, and now I start to believe. Wait, maybe actually he always intended for me to write it, and I was just kind of being suckered because along the way, you know, he kept telling me everything he was learning, so I was pretty much getting schooled on this on caving.
Spelunking? It's spelunking, right?
Yeah, and he keeps subtly sliding. Hey, watch this video. This is really interesting. And yeah, take it in. And next thing you know, I know enough to write a cave story. But, then I had to go, I had to borrow all his books and really, really bone up on it and everything. I knew some of it because I like outdoor stuff and I like camping. And, you know, I'm a sucker for anything like that. You know, one of these out of the wild story shows or something like that. I just love it, and you can get that from Innerman. You can see that I put a lot of that kind of stuff in there anyway. So anyway, and we had talked a long time about what we were finally going to work together on. So then it made sense that we would pull our resources and get going on this. And then once I got into it, it was extremely refreshing to me because I could write something that was much more realistic than what I normally write. And not that I don't like writing people flying around shooting death beams out of their eyes, but if you don't occasionally ground yourself, you know.
or underground. Fun.
Touch something in the real world once in a while, you're gonna lose perspective. so we said it's in the Appalachian Mountains. Even though it's in Kentucky, anyone who's from North Carolina, like I am, will probably pick up on that I'm cribbing a lot of it from what I know of the mountains of North Carolina and the people there. But Appalachia is almost its own state anyway, if you've ever been to that region. And we wanted to, we said in Kentucky, we wanted to kind of evoke Mammoth Cave, which is the big show cave that everybody knows. And what this is, the Stillwater Cave is in this little town of Marion. It's a cave that's been closed off. It's on national parks land. And, you know, people used to go into it. One of the main characters, Seth, who's a ranger and has a bit of a romantic interest with Wesley, he used to go down there when he was a teenager and horse around and drink in the cave and everything. But now, you know, the town is pretty impoverished and would like to open it up as a show cave and develop it so that it could be another tourist attraction.
Wait a second. An impoverished rural Kentucky town. You lost me.
Tourist attraction.
That's the science fiction,
right? Wait a second. but subterranean bat-like dwellers. Are you back on yet?
Yeah, okay, you got me. Stunned silence after that.
Okay. I couldn't tell if you were kidding. I was trying to make an acronym out of that.
The big thing was, and this is the main thing Steve came to me with, is he really wanted to do a story more like in the vein of A Simple Plan, where it's just normal people, and some people make some bad choices, and then things start kind of falling apart and spiraling into a very dangerous situation. So there's no masterminds in this. You know, there's no, we've got to get in there and get that gold in 24 hours or anything like that. it's simply a conflict of interest. And then once you get underground and what's really not a safe environment you should let your children go run around in, you know, things start to get progressively more dangerous, especially the farther they get into the cave system. So that's what it is. And our protagonist is Wesley Fisher, who also works for the Park Service. She's a park ranger, which makes her a cop, essentially, but not, you know, she's not used to having to deal with someone shooting at her. It's she's more used to the fact of telling somebody, hey, you can't be building a fire over here. You're totally going about this the wrong way. Get these rocks out of the way.
This shows you
it's a very new situation for her, but she has the one edge in that she's the only one around who knows anything about caving at all.
There was a couple years ago, I can't remember the name of the movie, I'm kicking myself for it, but there was a horror movie that was set, it was all women spelunkers.
The Descent.
Absolutely. And that just made me so claustrophobic. So as you're talking about this, and I'm envisioning myself, and as you said, there's no way, like, you know, grown men don't fit in those things.
I'm with you, pal, don't worry.
Oh, man, I'm already creeped out by the premise alone. And just thinking
about it. I just now watched The Descent, like, 3 weeks ago.
Okay.
I thought, you know what? So I had been putting it off, and I thought, I better watch this so I don't repeat something that they do in the movie, and then everybody goes, you ripped off The Descent. You always run into that, you know.
Oh, sure.
There's every kind of thing you do, there's always going to be something, especially there always seems to be something around the same time.
I think Kirkman is still answering questions about 28 Days Later.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. Well,
but anyway, I was like, okay, we don't have any bat-like underground dwellers to crave human blood. So,
have you thought about it, though? I mean, maybe just a little? Maybe like three.
What I like about those people underground, too, is they're like just walking bladders. They explode when you hit them with a picket.
They're delicate.
Those girls are swinging picks, and these things are just boom! Just blood and bones just go blasting everywhere.
Nice. Well, I like the timing that this is coming out, because that's about the release date for Whiteout, correct? Isn't it? Is that?
Yes. From,
yeah.
We finally did something calculated on our part.
Good.
Yay.
Which is what? No, we knew we were going to come out sometime this year, and they kept pushing the white. And at first, we weren't counting on that at all because they kept pushing the Whiteout release date around. And then finally, they kept holding on September 11th because who doesn't want to go see a good action movie on September 11th?
Let's go see things blow up. Yeah.
But you know, Steve's theory, and I kind of agree with it. I bet that what they're thinking is, we need something that's action that has no buildings in it, you know, nothing, no planes. Well, it does have a seaplane, but no one counts that.
That's right.
Mm-hmm. You know, anything like that. And I bet that was their reasoning. Either that, or it was simply an easy date to get because no one else wanted it.
Yeah, I always like the idea of it coming out in like August, whenever it's like 110 degrees outside to go watch.
Yeah, that's when I want to see a snowy movie.
Yeah, exactly, yep. Exactly.
Especially in Chicago, my God, it gets so hot there.
Dude, you're from North Carolina. It is. I'm from Southern Illinois. I grew up not that far from Kentucky. That's why I was joking about it. The heat here is nothing. Now you get North Carolina.
It's pretty bad in both places. I remember. I just always had a powerful memory of being there in like 98 or something when, was that year all those people were dying?
We did have a big drought right. And heat wave in the late 90s, I do remember.
And I remember I just wanted to go jump in that in the fountain and just stay in it. I was foolish enough to go to a Taste of Chicago, which was stupid.
Yeah,
no one should go to that.
That is when people
much
were dropping.
Much less in August. And, you know, it was just like... It was miserable.
Yeah, that's going on right now, and Taste of Chicago is something that everyone that lives in Chicago should go to once and only once.
That's enough.
And that's enough.
Yeah, you can make your own elephant ears. You don't need to go experience it.
It's a celebration of gluttony.
Yeah.
It's cheesecake literally on a stick.
Yeah. Wait, but John, now you're selling me on it.
Hey, man, I love food too, but holy shit. You know, sometimes put the fork down, man. I'm just saying it for myself.
Jeff, I'm assuming that you were probably here for a convention. And before I forget, do you have any conventions that you're going to be taking in for the rest of the year here that people can track you down and meet you face to face?
Oh, man, thanks for letting me do a plug. That's great. Mm-hmm. Let's see. The next show I'm going to, Hero Initiative just asked me to come out to their mini MegaCon in August.
Cool.
Which I think is like the 22nd, 23rd, so I'm going to go out to that.
Where's that at?
Which is it's been a long time. It's in Orlando, and it's been a long time since I've been there. And then the next show, I'm going to be at Baltimore's 10th anniversary.
Fantastic.
So Mark Nathan show.
Baltimore's a great, great show. It's so much fun.
And I'm assuming it's kind of a default you'll be in San Diego, right?
You're assuming that, but no.
Wow.
I was determined to not go this year.
Good for you.
Yeah, we'll see if I don't cave in at the last minute and still go down for a day or something like that. But I was just like, man, that New York show was so big and overwhelming.
Yeah.
And it took up so much time. I was just like, I can't do another big show like this year. It's like it just cut into my... Actually, somehow I still ended up making some deadlines during that. But I'm thinking this is my big chance. While everyone's gone, no one's going to be calling me to just like... jam and get like several scripts done at once. That's what I'm going to try to do.
That sounds like a plan.
I'm just going to go on my own little vacation and with my family or something like that.
It's almost a year away, but I feel like I should ask. Any chance we might get you at the Reed Industry Chicago show that's coming next spring?
The C2E2?
Now, that's actually going to be in Chicago, right?
Yes, it will. It'll be downtown.
Yeah, that's all I've ever wanted was to actually go to a Chicago show in Chicago.
Oh, well, it just so happens.
only we knew somebody.
If only we knew
on.
Someone that. No, we actually we put on the Windy City Comic Con. That's our show.
That's the small show
cool.
In September, and it's actually becoming
also
a nice little show.
In Chicago and not Rosemont. Nice.
In Chicago.
It's a block and a half from Wrigley Field.
Oh, well, that is certainly in Chicago.
Yes, yes. So, and
I can finally go back to the Field Museum. I love that place.
There you go. Well, anytime you want to come into Chicago.
Well,
maybe
I'll just do that instead of going to the big show. Maybe I'll go to both. I don't know.
Yeah.
But I haven't been to Chicago in a few years now. And
yeah.
Like, I've been meaning to come back. I love Chicago because it's one of those towns where everyone just kind of screws with you in a sort of... friendly way, like they're just some
no,
kind
no,
of
it's
mean
malicious.
Uncle or something.
It's absolutely malicious. Yeah, we mean it.
Yeah, it
yeah,
actually
Boston's
is mean spirited.
A lot like that too. You know, you go and people just start horsing around with you. They don't know you from anyone. Yeah.
No, it's a very friendly town. I've lived here for about 10 years, and I absolutely love it. And it's a great comics town too.
I thought of even living there at some point, but I can't deal with your 6 month winters.
I'd go as far as 7, man. This year,
I prefer the winter over the summer.
What does that leave 5 months?
We have a saying.
Not just in snow.
Well, we don't get spring, so that really.
We have a saying that you live for the summers and you endure the winters here, and that there's two seasons. There is winter and the 4th of July.
Hey, you've got we had a solid week of fall last year.
Yeah, yeah, at least a week,
It was a good week.
Well, yeah, you're definitely welcome. Yeah, anytime you want to come in from Windy City,
we'll do a, you know, Challengers will help out, bring them out, do a signing here, bring them to the show, that kind of thing.
Fine. Yeah, thanks.
Okay, we'll work on it.
Yeah, absolutely. We'll definitely talk about that with you. Another guy that I talked to about coming out for Windy City, and it's not this year because he's going to be in Montreal. I think there's another little show going on at that time. But that is Mr. Tom Fowler, and Tom is one of my favorite artists, and
he's
awesome. He listens to the other show that we do, 11 O'Clock Comics, and actually has been great about posting on the forums over there, and we've gotten to know Tom a little bit through that, and that was all because of a fantastic book that you two have collaborated on called Mysterious the Unfathomable, which just concluded its first mini-series, I guess you want to call it, and I was poking around the internet, and it looks like a February release for the trade on that.
It's Christy Quinn from Wildstorm's been contacting us about producing some extras and stuff. So this is shaping up actually to be another one of those trades where you get a lot of neat, like, new stuff and things you haven't seen.
Mm-hmm. DVD extras, cool.
So, like, I'm probably going to write just a little text story for like an old Mysterious back in the 40s or something.
Awesome.
And Tom's going to do some illustrations, and we'll have some stuff like that in there.
That's great. Well, that's a book that I hope.
I don't know why it has to wait till February.
Yeah.
But, you know, whatever.
Well, I hope that the trade does gangbusters business, because I want to see that series come back for a series of miniseries. I think it's a great group of characters. Mysterious is just a lovable dirtbag, and Delphi is a great character. I had so much fun with that. It was my favorite new series of this year, so I hope that you guys can come back and give us more.
Oh, cool. Yeah, and let me know if Tom's going to be on the show so I can listen to him. He's always good to have on a show.
Tom's actually, I've got, I'm kind of an art junkie, and I've got Tom doing a Doctor Strange commission for me right now.
Well, perfect.
Yeah. I can't wait to see it. So.
Yeah, I mean, no one's weird. Like, he and I got together on that. That was another one where I like to play to artist strengths, and I'm like, well, I've got to have some wacky monsters in here, because Tom's just the king of designing stuff like that. So that's when the whole, you know, the whole Mr. Gauss, little Dr. Seuss demons come up. Yeah, I knew Tom was just going to run with that farther than anybody else, and he did. I keep seeing artists looking at that one issue where they go into that little kind of sub hell where they are, and you just see jaws dropping. It's like, how is he doing this?
Yeah, it was Pee Wee's Playhouse from Hell. It was awesome.
It really was.
Well, the story played to both of your strengths. I mean, that's the thing. And I said this in our conversation, Jeff, that you know, your love of magic and adventure and humor is right there, and Tom is one of those perfect artists that can convey all that. And you know, there's a reason why the guy is this Jack Davis acolyte that does such great work over at Mad Magazine. And it still drives me crazy that more people aren't aware of these Mad Magazine artists in regular comics, because Tom is this genius artist and everything, and it, you know, I think for people that just read mainstream stuff, it was a real eye opener of who's this guy and where's this style coming from. And Mad Magazine people are like, he's been doing it forever.
You see somebody fully realized popping out of outer space for all you know.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, and a lot of us at shows have seen Tom for years. We've known he was this, you know, mega badass or whatever. But whatever, you know, he keeps getting brought in. Maybe it's because he's Canadian, I don't know. But he keeps getting brought in at last minute on things, or doing a fill-in here and there, having no time to do it or whatever. Never anywhere he can have any time to prepare or make a big to-do that Tom Fowler is doing this. And finally, you know, with this book, DC gave us plenty of lead time. We got to plan before we started working on it. So, yeah, it comes together as this fully realized thing that's like, wow. You know, I can sit down and read it like I had nothing to do with it and just enjoy it.
Yeah, it's a fun book.
Do you guys have another project coming up? Or is that still...
We were talking about doing something, and then that's... You know, they told us to wait. We're going to find out more at San Diego. So,
okay.
Yeah, we might. But it's one of those things. I better not jump the gun, because I'll break the spell.
Sure.
Well, yeah, I mean, you know.
But yeah, it was something else, not mysterious. But obviously, of course, like you say, I've got some other mysterious stories that I really want to get into, so I can hit the ground running anytime they let me know.
I really hope so. It's a great series, and it's one that I really think that's going to have a second life in trade, and you know that we'll be here to promote it as much as we can whenever it comes out, because I think it's one that people...
That seems to be the way I operate anyway.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's, everything like takes a while to sink in, and then... It's like, but just once, I just want to let you, the public and all your podcast listeners know, I could use a nice big fat hit right out of the gate, people. It wouldn't kill me. I would totally not look a gift horse in the eye if you decided, hey, let's make this a number one right as soon as it comes out, and instead of letting it build up over time.
Well,
that's not something I would object to.
Well, you just have to start right next, man.
Oh, he already did that, sir.
What's wrong with you?
And honestly, as someone who hates the X-Men, the most accessible X-Men book in the last 20 years, First Class.
I love First Class.
They are wonderful stories and completely clutter and continuity free, and you can just go back and enjoy the original core cast and their original purpose. And they are fun stories. They are good. Another complaint is, where are the books for the... You've got the kid books.
The tweeners.
And where are the books for the tweeners? X-Men First Class, perfect example of that.
It's a great... Yeah.
Jeff, I was going to say that your entire life is going to change now that you're on Around Comics, and starting Monday, it's like the money bag is going to start pouring in, the
really
red carpet everywhere. Yeah, absolutely.
I just
this is it.
This July 4th weekend, and then sweet.
That's it. This is your defining moment. So yeah, let this be the last 2 days of your old life.
I must acknowledge that the word balloon the word balloon interview we did was on the most recommended. It was on top of the Newsarama list for 2 weeks. As most recommended item on
Instagram's
site, so we must be doing something right, Jeff.
Yeah. Oh yeah,
yeah. I see people. It's like I think they just like it because John and I will just turn into two drunks at a bar babbling.
Remember that TV show?
And that's what people like to hear.
Well, I
like to hear. Like I was listening to you talking to Dan Slott the other day. I was really enjoying that.
Oh, thanks, man. He's awesome.
Funny. And I'm still like I listen to him on my I put them on my iPod, and then when I'm riding home on my bike,
I'll
listen to them. And since they get kind of long, I don't finish them in one thing. Like right now, I'm listening to the Jerry Conway interview.
Awesome. Yeah, well, that's the idea. Take your time and enjoy things like Around Comics as well. I mean, that's the beauty of podcasts, man.
I love podcasts. God, I would have killed for this years ago when like I was always wanting to know more about how comics worked and what it was like behind the scenes. If I had been able to... You know, just get sound files. So if there had been anything to listen to them on, you know, that would have just been incredible.
Well, no, sir. I think about one of my big regrets is that we just started getting into this show when Will Eisner passed away.
Yeah.
I would have loved to have talked to Will Eisner.
And I met him 2 years before I started doing Word Balloon. Yeah, I know what you mean.
And to think if this, and I know that there were some radio programs. There was one in New York, and there were a few of those that were around.
Enough Said and Hour of the Wolf in L.A.
But to have had this stuff accessible for me as a comic book fan whenever I was 14, 15 years old and, you know, coming up and reading like the old Byrne Claremont stuff, to be able to have access to that stuff, or be an aspiring artist and be able to listen to a guy like Joe Kubert talk about the process of creating comic would have been awesome. So, you know, I hope that we have listeners out there.
We'll get Kubert on. You know?
Yeah, we still can.
Got to get Senior, absolutely.
Yeah, so.
He's got tons of good stuff. The only bad thing is the fact that he's such a gentleman, you know, and he won't tell tales out of school. And you know he's got some good ones.
He's got to.
He worked for every studio, going back to Eisner and was it Jerry Iger? Was that his partner? Jerry Iger? Yeah, I mean, so yeah, you're right.
Another guy like that was Gene Colan, and we know that Gene had some moments in the industry that it didn't bend his way, but never a cross word would that guy say about anybody.
Except not Jim Shooter.
Come on, Gene, you outlived all of them. Come on, tell us some stuff. Come on, please. Yeah, you just always want somebody to just unload, you know.
Yeah, how about you, Parker? Burn some bridges, buddy. Who you got?
Yeah. Who's torqued you off, pal?
This is the whole point of having the last word. You get the last word. But yeah, I'm trying to think of who would be some other good guys like that to get.
You know, we talked to Byrne, and he was interesting. He had some he had some interesting moments, and
I bet he did.
Yeah. I had Neil Adams, and Neil Adams wasn't afraid to you know, point out a few people that didn't.
Agree with Neil, he's a bull in a china shop. There's no way you can't stop him from doing it.
Actually, on Byrne, and it may not have been on our show, but he had someone had brought up X-Men First Class, and he's like, yeah, wish they would have maybe tried that before. Oh, they did, X-Men The Hidden Years. And he was,
that's the great thing about John, he didn't hold a grudge.
Yeah.
Spider-Man Chapter 1 about Ultimate Spider-Man, yeah.
Exactly.
And I went, I remember at the time when the book was announced, and everything that of course became a big thing on the Byrne forum,
mm-hmm.
and so everybody's talking about it. They're railing on it, and somebody told me about it, so I went in there and looked, and I thought, okay, everybody's working under some misconceptions. You know, it's like it wasn't like a turnaround where Joe Quesada said, now we're going to do this, blah blah blah. It actually started with one of the VPs, David Gabriel, who thought this would be a good jumping-on point for people because my editors, Mark Panicia and Nate Cosby, they thought that altogether they thought it would be a good jumping-on point for people because of the movies, they know the X-Men or whatever, and you go to the original five with the school, it's as simple as possible, and you know, they had a variety of reasons they brought it up and got it approved and everything. So it really wasn't a rebuking of Hidden Years or anything like that. It wasn't even, you know, they weren't even considered together.
No, it was more of a case of right time, right place, and that was the time to get a book like
really
that out. Yeah,
it really was that, and I wanted to explain that, but on the Byrne forum, they have a thing where you got to register, and then you got 24 hours before you can post something, so you can't, which probably is a good idea, because then you can't just go in there flaming.
Yeah.
Or whatever, that'd be all they would be doing, was be putting out flames and trolls all the time. Mm-hmm. And so I registered for the thing, and I got Steve Lieber, who was a member, to pass on my thoughts. And I was just saying, so, you know, I just said, well, actually, this is the way it was, or whatever. I don't want anybody working with misinformation and stuff. And, you know, we're trying to be respectful to the Hidden Years, and as well as Stan and Jack stories, blah, 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 or whatever. And Byrne crabbed at me about something or whatever, and then by the time my little membership was approved, I went in. Also, I'd gotten some notices from some of the members saying, "Hey, welcome to the forum and everything. Come on in, we want to ask you questions." And I thought, "Oh, cool. This is actually going to be nicer than I thought." Uh-huh. And then I went there, and the thread was deleted. The thread's deleted, and you know, all that's like, yeah, there's nothing to respond to. They're like, okay. Well, I see the way this is going to be, so...
Yeah.
You've been removed
maybe I'll just,
from history,
but... pay any attention to this and go do my job.
Wow.
Yeah, well, I mean, when we talked with him, he was actually...
Whatever he's like now, I was a huge fan of John Byrne as a kid.
Yeah.
He totally had me on when his run on Fantastic Four.
Yep. Absolutely.
Yep. We talked with him, and he was fantastic to talk with. We had a great time, and I think that the internet persona sometimes overpowers the measure of the man. So, which happens with a lot of us. So
yeah, he should do his message board in audio form. He'd come off a lot better.
That would be something.
He could charge for that. I would pay.
Nice.
Somebody did who was it? Was it Shannon Garrity, I think, the other day, did a breakdown of some of the message boards online.
Yeah, that was awesome.
Kind of gave you a nutshell tour through the message boards and everything. I wish she'd go back and continue it. You know, she did like, here's the Newsarama forums, here's what this is like.
Mm-hmm.
And everything. It was really funny.
It was hilarious. But real quick on First Class before we let you go here, I think it's great that the First Class line has been able to expand. Wolverine First Class is one of my favorite Wolverine titles. It's actually the only one I buy monthly, and it's great to see guys like Fred Van Lennie get a chance to tell just fun out of continuity, or kind of, you know, mixed into old continuity without having to really be concerned about, you know, what color Rain is falling on who right now. And
it's a tough line to work though, because what you don't see is Fred or me having to, you're still having to dodge a whole lot of stuff so that it can be counted as in continuity, but you're not touching it.
Yeah, you're walking between the raindrops.
Yes, the raindrops thing, and it's hard to walk between raindrops unless you're a Shaolin monk. It's really tough.
Well, you guys do a lot of the
stories, I think Fred will say the same thing. People think, oh, I like the way you, this is very pared down and simple, but in fact, it was much harder for me to write than like Agents of Atlas.
Hmm, interesting.
My natural tendency is to go try to go complex and put a lot of layers in something. And to actually strip something down is a little harder for me.
I'm sure that the research involved in it's like, okay, where can this fit in and what exactly is going on at that time had to be kind of...
And the X-Fans don't make it easy. They're always, well, obviously they did not have the Blackbird at this moment in time. They could not have been flying in that. They always used a rental from the airport. I know, it's too easy to do comic book guy, but God, that voice just works perfectly.
Yes, it does. Exactly. All right, well, Mr. Parker, we want to remind people to be on the lookout for Underground, shipping in September, pre-order now.
Tell your retailers you can, it's actually ordering right now. In fact, they're about to close up the September orders. So
if you
want to just kind of elbow somebody or give them a candy bar and tell them to grab a couple extra of those, that would be sweet.
Oh, Patrick's waving at us.
All right.
Give me some candy bars. It's cool.
Yeah, he's hungry. Yeah,
right.
We've got 3 weeks before orders are due for that, so there's plenty of time for people to hear this and to get to their store and let them know what they want. Yeah,
well, he's a dealer. Okay. He knows.
That's me jumping the gun. Well, better early than never.
So I'd say listeners out there that were fans of Whiteout or fans of any of Jeff Parker's work should just go and tell your LCS owner that you want that whenever it comes out and get that sucker ordered.
And don't worry, Chicago listeners.
It is intended to be one of those gateway comics for the normal person.
Sure.
You know, you always have your mate or your relatives or friends who don't read comics, and you know they would probably like them, but you're like, well, I can't give them this because they don't know the whole backstory of Spider-Man or blah, blah, blah. It will be one of those that need no further introduction other than what it is. They'll be able to pick right up on it and get into it.
Great. I'm looking forward to letting my wife read it. Sounds like something that she would enjoy.
Your wife will like it. I guarantee it.
Well, that's not all she likes. That's a tougher sale than you may think, Mr. Parker. But I'm going to try.
No way, man. Women really like Enterman.
Okay. All right.
There you go.
Totally worked.
Call me effeminate then, man.
Like a boy book. Not in the sense of a boy band, but, you know.
Well, see, she does like boy bands. So
all my stuff is the boy band of comics. That's what I do.
And then we've got Mysterious just wrapped up, but look for the trade coming out in February. You've got Agents of Atlas, even more than monthly, and the new Exiles that is recently launched. So you are a busy man and keeping comics fun.
Dark Reign the Hood
Dark Reign the Hood.
What else are we missing, Jeff? Is that it?
Yeah, buy all those, please. Thanks.
There you go.
Buy all those, and like I said,
thanks for having me on,
man. You're welcome back anytime, and we'll try and rope you into coming out to Chicago one of these days, and having a couple beers with you, and we definitely want to talk with you again. But thanks for all the entertaining comics, and we'll be reading them more than monthly, it looks like.
All right, sounds great.
All right. Well, Jeff, thank you very much. You have a great rest of your weekend and 4th of July weekend, and we'll catch up with you soon. All right, man.
Thanks, Jeff.
Woo! Thanks, America! Fuck yeah!
More Fuck yeah.
in! You won't even let me through. And I want to be happy. And I only want you if you
All right, I want to thank Mr. Jeff Parker. Seriously, a guy that we've been meaning to talk to for a long time, just never have, and now I'm disappointed that we hadn't before. What a great guest.
He was among the first wave of Word Balloon guests when I first started in 2005, like June of 2005.
So I can pretty much guarantee that you will be hearing more from Jeff Parker in the future.
He was a great guy. He had a lot of good information to depart.
Yep, good guy. So hopefully we can bring him into to Chicago one of these days and have him in person. Which speaking of bringing people into Chicago, on Saturday, September 19th is the Windy City Comic Con, and you should know all about that by now. Go to www.windycitycomiccon.com for more details. And we have a little announcement about that. We have yet another guest.
One of the things that Challengers like so much about the Windy City Comic Con and working with you guys, getting this all worked out and everything, and it's just fun to be a part of it. And we are very happy to announce that we are bringing a guest to the show, Marvel Comics writer of Nomad, Mr. Sean McKeever.
Yay!
He's coming to the Windy City Comic Con. He'll be signing at our booth.
He'll be set up at the Challengers
booth. But more importantly, he's coming to the Windy City Comic Con.
Yay! Yeah,
so thank you for helping us put that together.
Our pleasure.
And thanks for Sean for finally deciding to come.
Finally!
Good Lord. No, we love Sean and love his work, and it's gonna be great to add him to the list of almost 80 guests
wow.
now.
And this is the new Nomad, Ricky Barnes.
Yeah, and it'll have come out right then, like the week before the Comic Con. So it's a perfect
wow.
Nomad girl without a world or something. I don't know.
Yeah, got a tease of her in the Captain America 600 edition. Yeah. Of course, she's a big part of the Heroes Reborn series and Onslaught Reborn.
There you go.
So nice. The Further Adventures of Ricky Barnes.
We have
so,
a couple other guests in addition to that we'll be announcing about the time that this episode comes out. Christian Alame, who is the inker for
Green Lantern.
All of
Doug Mankey's Green Lantern.
Doug Mankey stuff.
He did the Superman Beyond, Final Crisis Superman Beyond.
Ooh, that was good.
Were you there with us when we ran into that dude at the
C2E2 launch party? Yeah. Absolutely.
And we actually we got him signing here on Wednesday for Green Lantern 43.
Yep. So nice. So come in this Wednesday to Challengers
and meet
Christian in person. He's a very nice guy and a fantastic artist in his own right.
For a man from Paris, he speaks way better English than I do.
He lived in New York for a long time. So yes, he is French, but he's
one of the cool French dudes.
He's one of the cool French guys, and he's lived in the States for a long time.
Does not actually wear a beret.
Kisses so well, too.
That man makes sweet love.
Fantastic inker, fantastic artist
hands
in his own
so
right.
Soft.
And one of Christian's friends, who is also a phenomenal inker and a phenomenal artist in his own right, Mr. Tom Nguyen will be here for the Windy City Con.
Also known for his work on Doug Mankey, so
yep.
there you go.
Yep, so they'll have war stories about inking over Doug Mankey stuff.
Inking over the Greek guy.
Seen that dude's muscles, Tom Nguyen?
That guy is crazy. Oh. Like, he's bench pressing models as he's inking at the same time.
I've heard that Monkey is just crazy big. Just
he's got veins just like Simon Beasley, that fucking guy.
Tom has a great inking DVD he's got out, and I'm sure he'll be bringing some on the show. But it's because he's got all these pinup models assisting him the whole time. It's fantastic.
Nice.
It's half a burlesque video and half comic art.
That's very cool. That's very smart.
I would watch that.
Exactly.
I actually got to know and talk to him at in Rosemont after the Wizard World show a few years ago. There was a GlamourCon, and he was set up because he does all this pinup art that we never get to see in the comics industry. And I walked by. I'm like, wait, really? What? Because I had no idea why he would be there. Like, do you have any comic art? He's like, at a GlamourCon? Yes, I do.
Yes.
And that will be ching, ching, ching. So, yeah,
I bought some on the spot.
Yeah, very cool guy. Glad to expand the base of creators. So Tom is coming in from Minneapolis.
He still counts as Midwest, mm-hmm. yeah?
He's still Midwest.
That qualifies as Chicago in my book.
Yeah, not that we limit it. We've got Jeff Lemire coming in from Toronto with Jay Torres, also I think a Torontonian, and Chris Moreno and Robbie Rodriguez coming from the left coast.
Nice.
Along with Pat Wojka.
Did you say the left coast?
It is to the left.
Oh shit,
it's gonna be a great show. It's going to be fantastic.
I'm just cracking Burnham up.
We'll be doing
expand the base, maybe laugh. Expand the base. Think about it.
We'll be doing the pre-party at Challengers the day Howdy before night. The show.
Mm-hmm.
With as many guests as we can get.
Yeah, Claymore and a bunch of the Kansas City.
Clay fucking showing up.
Clay's coming. Jeremy's coming. Tony's coming. Seth is coming.
I'm leaving town that weekend.
Clay is bringing a busload of Kansas City writers and artists.
Honest to God, busload of writers and artists.
Yeah, it's going to be a bus signing tour. I think they're going to stop in St. Louis on Thursday, and then make their way up to Chicago. Alex Grecian from Proof and Jeremy Hahn, who still needs to send me an email and confirm so I can put him on the site.
I'll be doing that. I'll take care of that.
Yeah.
every now and then I got a butt, and he's like, I don't talk like that. And, Just want to point that out.
So it's going to be a very fun time. Shit. So check that out. All right, more stuff coming up at Challengers on July 17th. Dave McKeon
July,
will be here.
Thursday, July 16th. We have Dave McKeon, well-known Sandman cover artist, Vertigo cover artist, amazing painter. He's in town that weekend to do an exhibition of his new paintings inspired by silent cinema. Over at the Portage Theater, he's going to be displaying artwork. He's going to be showing silent movies he wrote and directed. He's going to be showing Mirror Mask. It's going to be a whole bunch of stuff there. The Thursday before that, 6 o'clock, we're going to have him here at Challengers from 6 to 8.
There are so many reasons to plan weekends to come to Chicago this summer. Yeah. And yeah, this one, honestly, this McKeon thing is going to be very, very cool.
Yeah.
And also the Portage Theater, if you don't know.
Beautiful. It's amazing. Redone.
And the reason why it was remodeled.
It's the Biograph in Public Enemies with Johnny Depp and Christian Bale.
The interiors were remodeled to make it look like the old Biograph as opposed to actually remodeling the old Biograph. They decided to do it to the Portage, which is great because we used to go there when I worked at WXRT.
Yeah.
It was in the neighborhood, and it was a pit. And it's so nice that they took a moment to really restore this theater because it's a wonderful old theater. Six Corners, Milwaukee, where Milwaukee, Irving Park, and Cicero interconnect. It's on Milwaukee, though.
Great old classic theater in Chicago.
Absolutely beautiful. Worth the trip, even if Dave McKeon wasn't there.
Wasn't coming.
I agree. That's a great
but he is.
All right. Actually, Mr. Parker mentioned the Hero Initiative. He's going to be at the Mini MegaCon, so we are always proud to help support the Hero Initiative. For more information, go to www.heroinitiative.org or call 310-909-7809 and remember to give back to the people that have given us so much enjoyment.
Chris Burnham is going to be doing the art. He's going to be following Fraser Irving on Forgotten Man number 2.
It's Days Missing. Days Missing number 2. Forgotten Man.
Days Missing, is that from?
From Archaea.
Days Very Missing cool. number Congratulations. 2.
And Dave Hine wrote the script. Dave Hine wrote Strange Embrace. The guy's not screwing around. And
Spawn.
Oh, there you go.
Mutant X.
Well, if I were 13 years old, I'd be more excited about that.
Mutopia and David Hine also. Mutopia and Spawn, of course, yeah.
There you go.
Yeah, right. And I think I did a pretty good job with the scribbles, but the colors by this girl, Lizzie John, she's going all out with a painted sort of thing.
Is this your new Nathan Fairbairn?
Hey, Nathan Fairbairn, asshole, won't even return my fucking emails anymore. I don't know if I fucked his wife or anything, but he's not returning. Nathan Fairbairn will always be my Nathan Fairbairn, but Lizzie John is doing this painted stuff, or it looks like we collectively are European.
So if she's painting, are you just penciling Thai pencils? Are you...
I'm going full inks, and then she's painting over it and leaving, like she's leaving the line work there, but it looks kind of like brush strokes. And then on each figure, she leaves the outline, so it separates out a little bit. It ends up looking like, what the hell's it? I can't come up with the guy's name, but it ends up looking like 20s artwork. It looks way better.
And this
would
be out of September.
September, yeah.
Are you done with it yet?
Amazing. I finished page 16, so yeah, my deadline's like a week and a half. Yeah,
nice.
Fine.
Cool. Excellent.
Have fun. All right, we'll talk about that more next week if you're going to stick around.
I may, if you ask nicely.
Chris, will you stick around for the next episode?
I'm out.
Please.
Oh, I will. Wow, you've got some updog on your shoulder there.
What's up, dog?
Updog. I love learning. I learned so much as a man in his 40s now from children.
Can we just end this week, man?
Okay. Check out Tom vs. The Flash. Check out 11 O'Clock Comics, The League of Nobodies, Word Balloon, of course. If you're in the Chicago area, check out our favorite comic book stores, Challengers Comics Conversation, and Woo! Dark Tower Comics and Collectibles. I'd like to thank everyone for being here, I think, except for Burnham. Mr. John Centris,
thank
Mr.
you.
Patrick Brower, Jeff Parker, of course, for talking with us, and Mr. Chris Burnham. Everyone, thank you for understanding while we were on that quick one-week hiatus. We are back on a regular schedule now. We'll be back again on Monday with another full-length episode. In the meantime...
In between time.
We'll be everywhere in...
And around comics.
I didn't know you were ready with that. That's very good.
What's up, dog?
Oh, shit.
Nothing. What's up with you?
views expressed in the interviews or by guests of the show are solely those of the individuals expressing them and may not reflect the opinions of Around Comics. Any reproduction, rebroadcast, or retransmission without the express written consent of Around Comics is strictly prohibited. All content presented in this program is the sole property of Around Comics, and this has been an Around Comics production. Copyright 2009.